there. Welcome to SaaS and Balance Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Trygve, co-founder of DataButton, an AI-powered no-code platform that allows users to build data and AI-driven applications through conversation. Mm-hmm. Welcome.
Thank you.
Sure. It's great to see you here. I do have a ton of questions for you. But before we go there, let's maybe start with your background and how you got to do what you're doing.
Yeah, that's a long story, though. So I'll try to keep it short. I grew up at university, so I was there for way too long. I did a PhD in mathematics. Then I did traveling around for a number of years doing like research. I don't know if you ever met a math PhD in your life, but if you meet them and they around researching, they just talk about how difficult it is to get a permanent job. That's kind of the topic everywhere. I did get a permanent job and then I quit. It was kind of, it felt kind of empty, right? It was like my door, your door is like number 15 on the right. And in there, it's like your desk. And it was a bit like lonely. So I quit that. And then I reskilled into AI data science machine learning. And I was an early employee at a company called Cognite, which is a Norwegian scale-up today. We were like 30 back then, and built up everything AI, data science, machine learning there over a number of years. Learned a lot from that. We had like customers like BP, Exxon, and so on, and were an integral part of their digitalization programs. So we learned a lot about like what it takes to change how you work and use AI data technology in order to change and work more modern. Like all of these companies were looking up to at that time, like Amazon, Google, and so on, and what they were able to do, and they wanted to be the same. And we were trying to help them do that, and we learned a lot of those years. And that's also where I met my two co-founders, and then we started DataButton. Then we've been on a journey. We started like around the whole concept of enabling people to solve their own problems, like very motivated from the experience of walking the halls of BP, Exxon, Dow Chemical, and those companies, and see like a lot of big digitalization programs fail. So at the same time, we have like these big initiatives, and we're going to do it so smart and fantastic, and here's the idea, and so on. At the same time, right, there are a lot of frustrated employees that sat around there knowing like small things that they could do in order to just reduce the hassle in their daily lives, but never got any priority because too small, right? So we were thinking like, how can we relieve that frustration that people has around their like tasks in their life and so on. So we were very much started around the idea of just enabling people to solve their own problems. And then with AI, we could, right? So when the AI wave hit and the ChatGPT API came out and so on, we finally had the technology available to us in order to actually do that and enable people to change how they work.
Okay. All right. So you're not one of the new AI kids. You actually know what it is. So
I'm old. No, I'm not that old. I'm old enough for sure. I've been helping people change how they work for the past 8 years, right? So yeah.
Okay.
Not a new AI kid at all.
All right. Well, then you know, the next question is going to be like your ChatGPT. Explain DataButton to me like I'm a 5-year-old. Like obviously I understand the concept, but what is the first principle of what you're building?
Yeah, it's an online AI agent. You log in, you chat with it, you talk about the problems you have and how you want to work differently and what kind of solutions you could foresee to that. And it will code for you, generate like UIs and backend and so on while you test it and give feedback. And together you iterate up like a solution. An app, and then you click deploy and it's out and you can send it to your colleagues and friends and users and you have something going and then you get the adrenaline rush and you can make that better. Yeah.
All right. So when you were talking about solving a problem and how you wanted to solve this for other people, the problem is basically working on their own something, an app, a website.
Yes, and then it's like, so most of our customers today, right, are small business owners. So I could take one example. We have, for instance, we have a guy in Texas in the US who buys and sells mortgages and runs like a 5-person shop doing that. And as part of that process, right, there's a lot of stuff happening. So first you get the potential deal, then it's like analyzing payment history of the people who has the mortgage. Then it's like driving up to the house and appraising it, like figuring out what is actually the value of this house, is it maintained and so on. And then it's like calculating a new value for the loan. What is this loan worth? And then you market that towards investors. So for instance, that whole process is facilitated by a DataButton app he built. Like the whole path from like lead to deal and all the steps in between and so on. Because if he has a system around that, he can process a lot more deals, right? Than if you have to like manually do everything. So that's an example, which is a little bit bigger. Then we have a smaller example is like a sales team where the sales leader is sitting, punching the same PDF into Salesforce every day, which is like just, I don't know why Salesforce doesn't have that PDF uploader, but then just build an app in order to like upload the PDF and that is then automatically put into Salesforce. So that on the smaller end, right? So that might maybe spans a bit for you.
Okay. So it's not just for building a SaaS, it's basically automating whatever workflows you have.
Yeah. So we do also have a number of customers who build like SaaS products and so on, but we talked about our background and where we come from. And where we come from is actually to enable people to solve their own problems in their workplace and their job and to work smarter and so on.
All right. Okay. And this is the part where, you know, you kind of have to navigate me a little bit and maybe correct me if I'm wrong. But what I read about DataButton is that it's still, the architecture is still Python centric, and you have to, like, in order to have like a full on experience with it and actually do a SaaS with DataButton, you need that bit of engineering knowledge. But then again, you have the no code in the description.
I wouldn't say that we're Python centric actually. Okay. So it's an agent that generates React front ends and Python backends. So it's actually of the products like this, where you talk to an agent and it generates an app for you. They're the only one that does actual full stack, in the sense that it generates Python fast API backends, meaning that well, you as a customer won't care probably. But you'll care about what it enables. So for instance, if you say, I would like to fetch all my contacts of HubSpot and have a connection to HubSpot and show like retention cohort analysis and a nicer Kanban board or whatever, then you'll only be asked for credentials to HubSpot. You don't have to like go and find a new service and do that and so on. So in a sense, it's actually less technical in using it, But I'm sure that when you go into that, but in the first time and so on, it feels a bit overwhelming. It has a learning curve. That's true. We're constantly working on reducing that. But today it does have a bit of a learning curve. But you don't need to code at any time in there, and none of us do. So yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Because you know, I read a bunch of like comparisons with, you know, Lovable and Bolt and Devin and Replit and whatnot. And yeah, that's just kind of the conclusion that I got. But okay, so that said, you know, how much of a, you know, ease and you said a learning curve. So
yes,
maybe that's a bit of a weird question, but how long do you think it takes for me, somebody who has like zero technical background, to go into DataButton and whip up a SaaS tool?
Full-on SaaS tool, 3 weeks. If you like spend full-on time and you actually want to build it and you go all the way and you have your first test customers and the whole thing, I think it will take you 3 weeks.
Okay.
That said, we also have support. So if you're stuck at any point, we have a chat bubble in the product. You can reach out and you get help to proceed. So, which is also a bit different than the other tools where you are just stuck. You're not there. We help you move on. But it will take you super short to get up like a first UI and so on. But to actually go all the way and have all the functionality and you have all the integrations you need and so on, I think three weeks is probably the right expectation setter here. I think that's true in any of the other products.
All right, that's wonderful. And maybe the next question is also a bit weird in a way, but how much is it going to cost me? So I want to do a SaaS, and you know, is a monthly subscription then takes me through the entire process, or are there is there something else that I need to account for?
No, we are a one-stop shop. You don't need to spend money anywhere else. It is a monthly subscription that's going to take you through it. But AI is quite costly, no? So I'd say in practice, it's going to take you those 3 weeks or the first month. It's going to be either $200 or $700, depending on it. On the $700 plan, we also deliver a lot of support. So whenever you're stuck, we jump into your app, we fix you, you get it moving in. So I can guarantee you app out on the $700. $200 if you don't use a lot of prompts, really.
I'll take longer, I promise you. but also, you know, let's talk about the learning curve. And I think that's very important because, I mean, a lot of people, me included, I felt like when the whole like ChatGPT and all the other AI tools came out, I fell for the trap of like, okay, whip me up a quick content piece about M&A, or I don't know, do a LinkedIn post or whatever. So I thought, you know, it's kind of like this magic thing. It somehow should work, you know, or know what I need. But of course, it hit me later that, of course, this is learning and I'm learning how it works and it learns what I need. So I need time. And yeah, I mean, for me, it just took trial and error. But for you as a business, what are you guys doing to teach people like me to do a SaaS?
Yeah, a lot of things. But yeah, so we're constantly working on that. So of course, today what we do is that when you come in and you talk about what you need, the first thing we do is to get up a plan for you and the agent together so that you can like see what are we doing now, what are we doing next, what are we doing after that. So you get like a feeling for the whole process, because that was one of the things we learned fairly quickly, that the ability to have an entire app plan in your head, like an app is pretty big, right? Unless it's like a Pokemon card counter or something, then it's a fairly big undertaking, really. To have that entire map of that in your head and where you're going and so on is a very technical skill. It's a developer skill. So that's why the first thing we do is to lay out like a plan, and then you go task by task and then you say like, are you happy or not, and so on. So at that level, it's okay. I guess we could absolutely produce more like learning material and so on, a bit short on that problem. Then the next level of that is like, how do you talk to it and how and do you understand it and so on? And that's, we do have some like prompt guides in our docs and so on about how to talk to it and so on. But I think in reality, it's like volume. You have to actually sit for a while, and we're constantly like reducing that threshold and working with the agent to get it easier and easier and easier. But this is an evolution, right? So when we started a pretty long time ago, so we started with GPT-4 Turbo, and that wasn't that was a very the models have come a far long way since that. And back then, you really had to know what to write. You almost needed to know how to code in order to prompt it. Then with Claude 3.5, the whole coding hurdle was gone away, but you had to specify it quite well in order to for it to be efficient. With now, where we are now on a combination of Gemini 2.5 Pro and Claude 4, things are much higher up in the stack again, and our prompting techniques on top of it has become better and so on. So we've been able to lift it quite far up in terms of like what you can talk about and how it resonates and so on. And so it's a constant evolution, right? To go from Rain Man coming straight out of uni, and that is who you work with, right? To like more of a seasoned consultant that is used to working with non-technical people, right? So that's an evolution that we tread and that we drive every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just talking to our own AI team at SaaS Group, and I thought I had like the simplest idea in the world. So what I want to do is I want to have a chat on the website where, you know, as a founder, I could come in and ask, you know, for a growth hack, for example. And then the answer would be one of the quotes from a podcast like this one, you know, a quote and then a link to a founder's LinkedIn and, you know, a link to an episode where it comes from. And I thought, you know what? I'm just going to like dump the database of everything that I have, all the transcripts from every episode, and that's it. That's it. And then I go and I ask a question, and they were like, no, this is not that easy. What you have to do is you have to teach the system how, how people are going to ask questions. What question is a good question? What question is not something we can answer? And in order for it to not hallucinate and like offer whatever bullshit answer it just comes up with. So, and like I said, this is just the chat.
I think we can solve that one though. I think we can solve that one.
No,
Yeah.
absolutely. But it's just like the complexity of this thing. Like I couldn't comprehend it. I thought it was just like, okay, it's just like ChatGPT.
So the issue with it, with your the only like challenge I see with your idea is the volume of transcript. It's a lot, right? It's
It is. It is
a lot of
almost 300 episodes.
text. Yeah, so it becomes like a lot of text. So a way for the AI to search that in an efficient way to find a quote, this is probably the hardest part. And that would be hard for you too, no? If you were to like, if I asked you a question and you were to find a quote for that from one of the episodes. Also, especially if you didn't, well, if you weren't the host of every episode, right? Then it would be quite hard for you too, right? To even though we had all the transcripts and so on, to find that quote would be a challenge for you too, no? So AI isn't that algorithmic, really, right? It's not a good search algorithm. It is more good at the things a human is good at. Which is a bit challenging maybe, but if it's hard for you to do, then it's pretty hard to get the AI to do too.
Interesting. All right, but my point was, well, maybe we'll get back to this later because I'm just super interested how it could work for me. But just to back to data button, but again, my challenge is a very, very small thing. But you guys are working with a full-blown SaaS, building things for people, so. I was wondering, how much training and, how much work it takes to even produce the first anything, because you don't know what people are going to ask. You don't know how people will describe what they want to work on. People may not even know how to describe it in the first place because AI, let's face it, it's just like we had it handled to us like 2 years ago. So how did you deal with that?
Yeah, so of course the first adopters of a tool like DeathButton, they're very, very, very early adopters. They are very tech interested. So for that audience, it is the blank canvas problem is smaller. You know what I mean? So they actually find the pleasure in like, maybe I can use this to generate that. And so all right, and they have ideas from before. So those are not that difficult. But we see now the need to have more like examples and templates and ways to reduce the blank canvas problem, right? So that's true. In terms of like. Building a product based around chat, it is a new kind of UX challenge, right? It's a black box where people can write whatever in and so on. So it is kind of to set a tone of voice early, for instance, like so that people get sort of a feel for how to talk to it. Like if the AI starts by writing something to you, for instance, that is a trick in order to get you into a way of communicating, for instance. So you have to think a bit like around all of those parts. So it's design in the behavioral sense that you're doing. At least when I talk to the product guys we have, they talk about a new model as kind of onboarding a new employee. And it takes time, right? So they feel that they get like someone straight out of uni when they take the model blank. And then it's kind of to train it on the job. Here's your tools that you work with, and here's like a working description, and then it's like seeing how it's doing when it's working, right? And then it's like correcting a behavior that you don't want and writing that into the instructions. So it's a kind of a process over a couple of weeks to make it efficient at this job. And then the rest is more like the developing the tools that it has in order to do its job and so on.
This episode is sponsored by Rewardful. Looking for new ways to find customers for your SaaS business? Consider building an affiliate program. Rewardful is the easiest affiliate tracking platform to set up, manage, and scale for SaaS companies. Building a successful affiliate program can be a little bit intimidating at first, and that's why Rewardful has taken what they've observed from their most successful customers' affiliate programs and distilled that into an exclusive online course. The exciting part? Their affiliate marketing course is absolutely free. Start the course at academy.rewardful.com. Academy.rewardful.com. And turn your biggest fans into your best marketers.
Okay. All right. Yeah, thank you for walking me through this. I mean, to be honest, I'm like, I have so many whys, like when it comes to AI. But well, since you mentioned employees, this is maybe my one and only, a little bit of a controversial question, but it's just based on one of your recent posts. You reposted this piece of news from Microsoft that they are firing 6,000 people and replacing them with AI. And you went on explaining how it's going to work and maybe how, you know, the world is going to look like in the next couple of years. And, you know, it's very interesting. And we see examples of, you know, the entire company orgs where it's just AI agents. We also see examples of companies hiring their people back because AI didn't exactly work. So, again, taking into consideration the fact that it's just a couple of years that we got AI to play with, do you think that there are already enough people that know how to navigate it, know how to be that, you know, manager of AI? And is AI at the point where it can actually replace people?
Yeah, we see that every day, right? But what AI is good at is to produce things that are good enough in a lot of cases. You know what I mean? So it's not the best writer. It's not the best coder. It's not the best at writing poems or doing ads or anything, but it's good enough in a lot of cases. And that's the challenge, right? That AI is good at producing. I think what Klarna, which you referred to, did wrong was that that was not production. That was like human relation, and AI is not very good at human relation. so I'm not very surprised that they hired the people back. I think at the bigger enterprises, like the biggest companies, they don't have any way to like leverage their productivity growth. You know what I mean? So you sit and you know that AI is a good enough content writer, for instance. Meaning that like one in their content team can produce like 10 did before, right? But they don't have any way to leverage that increased production. So the only way they deal with it is to cut employees, right? So this is not a very like a nice story seen at the enterprise level. But if you look at the SMB level or smaller companies or companies like climbing up and taking on the big guys, if you go from that perspective, then the increased productivity you can leverage, and you can certainly produce content like the big guys, and you can certainly compete for attention space, right? You can, and as a human, you can certainly afford legal services, right? So for it doesn't mean that the total number of humans employed in the world necessarily goes down, right? But where they work is differently, and who competes is differently, and the whole playing field is changed, really. And that, so it's actually a quite inspiring story that is good for the world, but we tend to focus on like the big laggards who doesn't have a way to grow, like they're already too big, no?
Yeah, no, completely understand it. Yeah, like with Twitter, remember? Like it was such a, you know, at first everyone went crazy about all the firings, but then they were like, oh, okay, but maybe it's not that bad. And I mean, of course, on like personal level, it's probably a horrible story for a lot of people, but business is business, right? And it's a business decision. But at the same time, you know, a lot of big corporates are bloated with absolutely unnecessary positions, and that's true. But again, like, my question is just on the AI adoption level. Like, how good do we know what we're getting ourselves into? What do you think?
I don't know. I think it's a massive disruption now. So, but luckily we live in societies, most of us, where people have the power to, in reality, right? So I'm not very worried that we won't find ways of, like, organizing our societies in a way that this is just a good thing. Like, ever increased productivity is normally a good thing.
How much of it do you use or you leverage a data button?
Enormously. There's nothing that is not done by AI almost in production. So yes, we still need people, right? But we probably produce more and more efficient and hit above the size of the number of people. I think it's all up a good thing, right? It makes startups with less access to capital or less access to talent or less connections able to compete. So all up, it's a good thing, right?
Yeah,
it makes more Vietnamese startups able to take on Silicon Valley companies, and right?
Probably, yes.
Yes, right? Because they're probably harder to raise capital in Vietnam than it is in Silicon Valley, right? So it's harder to hire, like, a team of 100, and it's you probably know less people with a million followers on X, so it's harder to get through the bus, right? So AI is very, very good for them.
What kind of AI tools do you use for building data button?
Like, on the dev side, people use Cursor to kind of just generate code. I think not everyone, but some are using something else that I don't have access to. I don't know. I don't follow. Personally, I use chat interfaces. I use OpenAI, I use Anthropic, and so on, and Gemini. But I don't produce an awful lot either, personally.
Interesting what you said about, like, the fact that you don't really know what kind of AI tools your developers might be using. Because I was talking to somebody who works for a bigger corporate, and what they were saying is that they absolutely cannot use tools like that because, well, they're afraid of, you know, a leak or whatever. And in your case, you are enabling your team to just go out there and use whatever it takes to produce better results more efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, they have to, no? All right. It's the name of the game. But no, I'm not afraid of anything, right? The biggest risk in our company isn't that anything is leaked from the developer side at all. That is not the risk.
What is the risk, though? Like, what do you have any concerns with AI?
Oh, if I have AI concerns in the business, not really. Not more that we don't leverage it as efficiently as we could, right? More those kind of concerns, but I think we do, right? Like, we use our own product to build all internal tools. We are, like, super streamlined in terms of operations internally. Like, everyone has access to all data at all times, all processes are automated, everything is, like, super streamlined. So we dog food our own tools in that sense. The product itself cannot be built by DataButton, right? Because we started the DataButton before DataButton existed. So that is more like a classical GitHub repo that people pushes into. So on the AI side, no, then it's more like... that we are able to stay on top and leverage it good. But the biggest risk in business is more like making sure that we gain mindshare and that we have the right, like, marketing activities and that we're in the right places and the right events. And
yeah.
That's the risk that we lose in that battle, right? The rest is not the same risk. No.
Okay. So, all right. So that is my question as well. So, you know, it's AI everything, right? I hosted an event just a couple of weeks ago in San Francisco, and a founder walked in. He was like, Anna, forget about my last thing. I'm building something new. And I'm like, okay, what kind of AI is it? And he was like, wait, how do you know it's AI? And I'm like, well, we all know it's AI. Let's face it, right? Everyone's building it with AI. So because of that, and you know, there is this huge FOMO with users as well, right? Who all want to try everything that's out there. You know, there is this huge competition between all the models, like you said. And yeah, I wonder how you're working with it in terms of like reducing churn and making sure that you're on top of minds of your users. And
So we're a very value focused company. Like, users getting value is the most important thing for us. And that sits in the walls. So you could see that in things like we do support, right? And we make sure that people succeed. We make sure they get all the way. Untraditional company in that sense. There's no one who stood and said like, yeah, this doesn't scale, blah, blah, blah. There's, no, we just do it and we figure it out along the way. But we strongly believe that if people get value, then we will succeed. That is the core of this business for good and bad.
Okay.
So, and then you could say that, I guess, like, the perfect data user is pragmatic, in the sense that you have stuff you want to actually get solved and you're going to get out and so on. It's not about shiny AI toys, really.
All right. How do you compete still? Like, I already mentioned a few names, like Lovable, Bolt, Devin, Replit, there's a bunch of others. How do you compete with them and make sure that customers use you?
That's like two sides to that, I'd say. If you go and you see who our customers are and who Lovables and Bolts customers are and so on, you won't find the same people, really. So Lovable and Bolt have a lot more of the like prototyping, MVP, getting something up fast, design, PM, technical people kind of audience. With us, you don't find the same. We have a lot more like small business owners trying to change how they work, creating tools for themselves, and non-technical SaaS dreamers who build the entire thing with us. We don't have the like people who go to Cursor and so on. So it's quite different. And in terms of like differentiation, there we are the only one who does like a real backend, and you can go and build real production apps. That's not true for any of the others. And we do support basically. So we go all in at people getting value and so on. So I guess that those are the two sides that really makes us stick out in that competition. That said, we grow very, very fast, but we don't grow as fast as those companies either. So of course they've been better at us at gaining mindshare and being visible and so on. And but we're coming, trust me.
Okay, and I want to ask about that. Obviously, you know, what's the growth strategy, and where do your customers come from at the moment?
No, so our like biggest channel outside the word of mouth has been YouTube for sure. People having that as a news channel basically, and then you are a part of the AI news there, and they see you and they come in and they try you, and then word of mouth. Those have been like our two big channels.
Okay, but you know, word of mouth is very difficult. You know, we like to say, as marketers, growth people, we like to say, oh, it's just a word of mouth. But word of mouth is one of the hardest things to actually start. How did it start for you?
How did it start? No, I think we're part of a trend, right? Where these kind of tools are talked about a lot, and it's kind of a movement around it. So I think that has helped a lot in that sense. And then it's to have actually a differentiated product that talks about other things and is good. And then we've had like YouTube as the main like driver of activity, and then people have shared. So it's I guess that's about it. It's hard to attribute, right? We know that the people come in through word of mouth and so on, but I can't attribute it to some like clever shit in the product or something like that. We don't have like a button that just spreads word of mouth or something. We probably should. We don't at the moment.
Once you invent it, please reach out. But absolutely. I mean, that's how I was preparing for this podcast as well. Basically, I just went on YouTube and just coming back to like all the differentiation and all the comparison of the tools. It was all YouTube. And I even found this very interesting video that I loved watching, to be honest. And again, I'm not a technical person, but it was just so engaging of a person just kind of building an app with that button. And it was, I don't know, seemed easy enough for me. So that's, you know, where all the questions are coming from. I might be your next user.
Please do.
All right. So
that you build that chat, and then go to your AI team with it done.
I did it without you guys.
Exactly. Go do that.
All right. I'll definitely try something. But also coming back to like the FOMO question. I mean, obviously there is FOMO with users and customers, but I feel like as a founder, you also have it because there are new tools, new models, new requirements. You want to play with it as well. How do you guys stay focused and, you know what you're building when you know, the space is moving at such a fast pace?
Yeah, that's fun, right? Because we are a mission-driven company, started before AI. So for us, that isn't that difficult, right? Because we have all always been about the same thing, and we know which users we want to enable to, like we know what for who. So we stay focused on that. And we stay focused on value. For us, AI wasn't like an opportunity that came along. It was an enabler to like pursue the mission we were on in a better way. So it's I think that's a benefit in that sense, that you don't sit and pivot with all the latest technology releases and so on. We don't. Instead, we hone in on like the users we want to enable to do what, right?
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. I was just having a conversation with Jason Fried about their new tool. And I asked them how they decided to build what they're building. Is it customers? Is it just their own vision? And he said the first iteration of the product is always just them having a vision, having an idea. And then, you know, once it's kind of out there and people are trying it and hopefully buying it too, then they start the customer communication. How did it work for you?
Yeah, so we actually, when we had something that was almost testable, then we actually hit people up on LinkedIn, booking a meeting, showing a demo in the meeting and sending a Stripe link in the same meeting, charging them there and right there and then for the first month. And we felt that if we could do that, then we had validation.
Okay. How many people that you reached out to actually convert it?
On the outreach to first meet conversion, that was probably I don't know, 1% or 2 or something. it was not a very big percentage, but all the people that we were in the meet, we converted like 40% or something.
Oh wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think we took, then we were like, we were saying that was like $100 a month or something. And then we gave them, of course, like a 40% discount on that or something. So it was like $60 in the meeting. Yeah. On a Stripe link right there.
Right. Okay. That's awesome.
So we've learned for a while, right? Like, yeah, that's the only kind of validation I trust is people actually paying. Because otherwise people want to be nice, right? Everyone wants to be nice. No one wants to say like this is I'm never going to pay for this. People will never say that to you. They will be nice and say like, yeah, I see how that this could be useful if I was blah blah blah. And many are also like speaking on the behalf of others. Yeah, I'm not your target user, but if I was this person, I'm sure that blah blah blah, right? That's a very common thing that people think they know things for others. So if people actually pay, then I feel like we have validation.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I just have a couple more questions. They are the usuals here. So far, you know, all this journey, what do you think has been your biggest win and the biggest failure?
Yeah, so biggest win. When we started investing in like generating the whole app with AI back in September 23, you should have been to those board meetings. There wasn't a single believer. And no one believed in that. And if you fast forward a year with like Volt.new blowing up and then Lovable later and so on, then in those board meetings, the mood was different. Then it was like, yeah, it's obvious that this product has to exist and blah, 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 right? So that was a win, I'd say. On the failure side, right, we are a product team. we came as a good product team, but we're not a marketing team or a sales team or a commercial team, right? We came out as a good product team, and we come out of Norway where like the access to people who have done this before and so on is very small, and we don't have like big networks of founders or something like that ourselves, so we had to learn. So along those way, that path, we have learned through failing, right? Learning like actually how to distribute and how to get mindshare and eyeballs, and yeah.
Mm. Yeah, well,
so it's been a lot of learning around that.
Yeah, not a failure, but a learning. That's amazing. But to your point of like the board meeting, again, to one of the events that I hosted in the US, there was a founder. He was one of the first ever guests on this podcast. It was 2-something years ago. And I was like, Josh, I remember you mentioned AI and building AI into the product. And I was like super skeptical. And it was just, you know, super scrappy, half manual, whatever. And nobody really thought it's going to be anything. And that's just 2 years ago. And now literally everyone is building with AI. And there is no conversation that doesn't have AI in it.
No. Absolutely. No, well, I don't think the board was AI skeptics, to be honest. But for us to go and like generate all code with AI back then, it was early, in a way. So, but turned out very well.
Well, bad for them. I mean, could have invested earlier.
This was our existing board, right? They were invested.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's been a journey. It's been a fantastic journey, and it's only the beginning, right? So it's very exciting now. No one knows what is going to happen in 3 months, right? It's everything is a lot in flux. You can see it even on like the big AI companies doesn't know what's going to happen either. They like invest in that product and they do that, and then it's 2 months later it doesn't work at all. It's anyone's guess these days. What will pan out in the end and how and so on. So it's a time with a lot of opportunity for big and small, right? And so
Absolutely.
I don't think there's ever been a better time to be a startup in reality.
Interesting. But yeah, I mean, I am also experiencing so much anxiety with all the news about AI that, you know, I decided to let it go. And the only kind of news that I'm checking is we do have a Slack channel, a SaaS group where we talk about AI. And I only check that because I know it's kind of like pre-vetted by people from SaaS group. Yeah. So it's the important stuff.
But I think you have to remember, I think like if you're going to build in this space, I think you got have to. So people normally build startups for themselves, no? I've rarely seen any startup being able to build anything that's not for themselves. But now might be the time to think about not doing that. Because if you build in the like developer tooling space, right, then the chances of getting disrupted by one of the bigger AI companies and so on is very big. And you're gonna sit with watch the news with anxiety every day because it comes company out of stealth with like a 50 million seed, or it comes out like some new things from OpenAI, or right, and you're gonna feel that. I think the time now is to think about what problems do people really have, right, around in places, and you hone in on the problem and that user group, and less married to like technology in a sense, because people's problems will remain, right. So you can go in and you can solve that very well for those people. Then AI is a tool for you, right? And yeah. If AI becomes better, you become better at your job. And it's not like ChatGPT or OpenAI or one of these big models is going to know everything about everyone, which is not on the public internet, right? And yeah. There's a huge opportunity to go in and think about how can I make these people more productive and solve those problems in a good way. And so,
exactly. Go people-centric. Okay. All right. The last question is always about a hack. So it can be anything. It can be, you know, something that keeps you focused, something that makes you learn marketing faster, anything that you think founders would appreciate.
I don't know if you have many founders with children, but what I do is I set off time every day from 4 to 8 with my children, and I keep that sacred. Then I work afterwards instead. And I don't know if it's a hack or if it's like common or something, but to do that religiously keeps you balanced.
That's a good one. It's not a hack, I guess, but it takes so much time to get to it. Like, to be honest, it took me 2 years maybe working and trying to like juggling, having the anxiety and stress about work before I started doing that. But now I completely agree.
So that's one of the things I do in order to keep balanced, at least. The rest of the time I work, all the time.
And it's automated, so I work like 8 developers.
The other thing I do is that I avoid the control over like the company, like a control need for all I can. I let people just do, and then we rather talk about the result.
Okay.
I don't want anything to me and this. Is this okay? You approve as little as possible of that and just let people feel that because that builds ownership with people, that builds excitement, that it makes it fun to work there, right? And the moment you start with like reviewing things and like sending it through you and so on, you in reality is leveraging a much smaller portion of your company to learn. Like people don't learn, so you underutilize your company is another thing.
So how do you assess developers' performance?
Developer performance? No, it's like we only hire developers that care about users and what users can do and not, and is very focused around that. So we only talk about performance in terms of like what we were able to achieve. No. There isn't any other way to measure it from my point of view, but we don't hire the kind of people who want to build it very right or very scalable, or if that's my main drive or motivation, that they don't fit in our company. Basically they should work at a bigger place where they can get an outlet for that, because for us the only thing that matters is that users is able to like get their job done today and tomorrow, and what happens 2 years from now is less important. Right.
Yeah. All right, but thank you so much. I think those are great hacks and a great story. It was very inspiring to learn about this, and I honestly want to try the tool now. So
you have to create
look for me.
Yeah, all right,
in your customer base. Thank you so much, Dugman.
Okay, bye.
And take care.
That was yet another awesome conversation on SaaS Unbound. We're always looking for new guests to share their experiences. We mostly talk with bootstrapped SaaS founders, and if you're one, reach out to me directly at anna@sas.group or find me on LinkedIn. If you're not bootstrapped or even not SaaS, but have a great story to tell, we want to hear from you too. And obviously, SaaS Unbound wouldn't be possible without the SaaS Group, a founder-friendly private equity company that buys awesome businesses that people love to take them to even greater success. If you're thinking about selling your company or just exploring your options, feel free to visit saas.group, fill in the form, and expect a response in under 24 hours.